This is Lois Pausch reading the Vermilion County News for Friday, January the 17th, 2020. And the first article has the headline, County News, County Names, Chambers After Late Member. Dateline Danville, Vermilion County Board members this week named its meeting chambers to honor a longtime former county board member who passed away 5 years ago. Board members approved naming the Vermilion County Board Chambers as the Ivadale Foster Vermilion County Board Chambers. Vermilion County Board Member Fern Butler started a petition last year to have the county board meeting room named after Foster, who served on the board in District 8 for more than 30 years. Foster died at age 93 in 2015. Butler asked the public for help in reaching the 500 signatures needed of Vermilion County residents ages 18 years and older for the chamber's renaming. Butler replaced Foster on the county board in 2016. According to the resolution, quote, the county board now receiving such recommendation does concur and endorse such request that the county board chambers be named in honor of Ivadale Foster, given her contributions to the community, longevity as a county board member, and many other achievements of note, including her election as a woman of color at a time when such was sometimes a difficult achievement, close quote. A plaque will be placed to note such honorary naming in her memory. The chambers are located on the second floor in the Vermilion County Administration Building, 201 North Vermilion Street. The county board has a policy in place on naming public property. In 2017, the Vermilion County Courthouse was named the Rita B. Garman Vermilion County Courthouse to honor Justice Garman's accomplishments. In other business Tuesday, county board members approved a resolution for collection of delinquent taxes, a revised personnel, alcohol, and drug policy, and also an intergovernmental agreement with the Central Illinois Land Bank Authority. The land bank agreement is for the county to temporarily fund the land bank's executive director position and associated costs of maintaining an employee, including but not limited to payment of employment taxes. The governmental bodies, which are land bank members, will reimburse Vermilion County for the salary costs. Land bank executive director Michael Davis is not a county employee. Davis's salary was set by the land bank board at $85,000. The county board also approved wages and benefits for IBEW Local 21 non-judicial unit and Laborers International Union of North America Local 703, an election judges ordinance to reduce the number of election judges for primary elections to 3, and a county maintenance resolution for $1.6 million in motor fuel tax funding for this year. Among the appointments, the board approved Frank Young serving on the Chris Rural Mass Transit Board of Directors, replacing Jane Darby, Deidre Culbreth to the Oakwood Fire Protection District to replace Randy Smith, Cheryl Rotrammel to the Vermilion County Mental Health 708 Board, and Jonathan A. Myers to replace Bill Ingram on the Vermilion County Regional Airport Authority Board. Myers' term is for 5 years, from December 2019 to December 2024. And now the next article has the headline, Bigs and Brews. Dateline Danville, an event planned by Big Brothers Big Sisters of Central Illinois, Vermilion County, next week, will celebrate National Mentoring Month as well as kick off the program's most important fundraiser of the year, Bowl for Kids' Sake. Bigs and Brews will take place 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, January 22nd, at Lincoln Lane's Annex, 104 West Harrison Street. Community members are invited to the event to learn more about what Big Sisters of Central Illinois, Vermilion County, offers area children, as well as how to become a volunteer mentor or local board member. Bigs and Brews is a social event to kick off Bowl for Kids' Sake, said Christina Dietzen, Community Partnership Manager for Big Brothers Big Sisters of Central Illinois, Vermilion County. Bowl for Kids' Sake is our biggest fundraiser. Individuals or groups interested in forming a bowling team for the 2020 Bowl for Kids' Sake also can sign up during the Bigs and Brews event. We're looking for sponsors and teams. We'll be signing up teams on the spot, Dietzen said. The faster you sign up, the more likely you'll get your desired bowling time. Any team captains from last year should come on out, and any potential sponsors who are interested in learning more. There will be a short PowerPoint presentation at 5:30, she said. Area businesses, organizations, mentors, and community members are encouraged to form teams of bowlers to participate in this year's Bowl for Kids Sake that will take place from 5 to 10:30 p.m. April 3rd and noon 3:30 p.m. April 4th. At Lincoln Lanes, the theme is Decades Party. Each bowler will collect pledges that will benefit Big Brothers Big Sisters of Central Illinois Vermilion County. There can be 4 to 6 people on a team, and we want each person to raise $100, Deason said. They can come dressed as their favorite decade, and there will be prizes for the best costume. The funds raised during Bowl for Kids' Sake will help the organization provide one-on-one mentoring and other programs for children in Danville and around the county, Deason said. The organization, which is a United Way of Danville area agency, still maintains a local office on the second floor of the First Presbyterian Annex at 100 North Franklin Street in Danville. Big Brothers Big Sisters provides two different types of mentoring for children. Through community-based mentoring, in which the mentor and the child meet outside of school hours, or school-based mentoring, in which the mentor visits the child weekly during the school day. With the community-based program, the volunteer will meet with their littles, with their little outside of school in partnership with the child's parent for a minimum of 4 hours a month, Dietzen explained. Mark Denman Elementary School in Danville is the home for the organization's school-based program, during which a mentor will meet with the child for 45 minutes once a week. Dietzen said the organization has a great need for mentors, especially male mentors. Right now, we have about a dozen matches, with 4 matches made just in the past 3 months, she said. We also have 10 to 15 kids on a waiting list. We will still service those children on the waiting list, even though they're waiting for a match, she added. Children between the ages of 5 and 12 are referred to the one-to-one mentoring program by school social workers and teachers who recommend a student to a social worker. We also get calls from parents who would like their child to be involved with the program, Deason said. Individuals who are interested in becoming a volunteer mentor will be asked to fill out an application and then will be interviewed and attend an orientation. We will also go to their home and do a site-based interview, she said, of potential community-based mentors who meet with the child outside of school. We do that because maybe the child might go to the volunteer's home and bake cookies, for example. We also do background checks, social media checks, and contact references, Dietzen added. It's very intensive because the safety of the child as well as the volunteer is our top priority. After a volunteer mentor and the child have been paired, we do match support and contact the volunteer, the child, and the parent every month to see how things are going, she said. Dietzen, who also is in charge of fund development and shares case management duties with part-time case manager Jamie Hinchy, said she has started going to Danville businesses to offer lunch and learn sessions in an effort to find additional volunteer mentors for the program. Kids need that extra adult in their life, she said. And now for the obituaries. And the first is for John, quote-unquote, Domino Bob Snyder, who died on Sunday, December 29th, 2019. A celebration of life has been planned for 1 to 4 p.m. Sunday, January 19th at Sarge's Tap, 403 East Main Street, Danville, with a meal being served at 1 p.m. The family invites you to come and share your memories, jokes, stories, and laughter. The next is for Richard Philip, quote-unquote, Dick Layden of Hoopston. He was 89 when he passed away on Tuesday, January 14th. A visitation will be held from 2 to 5 p.m. Sunday, January 19th, 2020, at 427 at Anderson Funeral Home, 427 East Main Street, Hoopston, with a rosary service at 4:45 p.m. The funeral mass will be held at 10:30 a.m. Monday, January 20th at St. Anthony Catholic Church, 423 South 3rd Street, Hoopston, with the Reverend Patrick O'Neill and the Reverend Tom Gibson officiating. Following the services per his wishes, he will be cremated and burial will be held in Floral Hill Cemetery at a later date, with his son, the Reverend Christopher A. Layden, officiating. And the next is for Gail Doggett, 88 of Danville, who died on Wednesday, January 15, 2020. Services will be private. Rortvedt Funeral Home Funeral Services, 3 South Hodge Street, Tilton, is in charge of arrangements. And the next is for Beverly Jean Hobbs, 90 of Danville, who died on Monday, January 13th. A celebration of her life will take place at 11 a.m. Saturday, January 18th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville, 3940 North Vermillion Street. Visitation will be from 9 to 11 a.m. prior to the service Saturday. Burial will be in Sunset Memorial Park. And the next is for Helen M. Walters, Holtz Talbert Cunningham, 96, who died on January 14, 2020. A celebration of her life will take place at 2 p.m. Saturday, January 18th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville, 3940 North Vermillion Street. Officiating will be Reverend Dr. Dale McNeil of Second Church of Christ. Visitation will be 1 to 2 p.m. prior to the service on Saturday. Burial will be in Greenwood Cemetery in Danville. And now we go back to the news articles with an article with the headline, Danville House Hit by Gunfire. Dateline Danville. Danville police continue an investigation into a residence struck by gunfire Wednesday afternoon. According to the Danville Police Department, at 2:22 p.m. Wednesday, police officers responded to the area of the 1100 block of Harmon Street for a report of shots fired. Officers learned a residence in the 1100 block of Harmon Street had been struck by gunfire. Occupants of the residence stated they were inside when they heard the gunfire, but they didn't see who was shooting. No injuries were reported. No suspect information is available. The investigation into this incident continues. Anyone who has information regarding it is asked to call Danville Police at 217-431-2250 or call Vermillion County Crime Stoppers at 217-446-TIPS. And the next article has the headline, Danville Man Dies from Crash Injuries. Dateline Danville, a 23-year-old Danville man died Wednesday from injuries he received in a crash. Vermillion County Coroner Jane McFadden said Thursday the accident at 7:16 a.m. Wednesday on Lynch Road claimed the life of Kirkland O. Butcher, or Butcher. An autopsy was performed on Wednesday, according to a release from McFadden. Butcher's identity was held until out-of-state next of kin could be contacted. No information is available as to the condition of the others involved. The Danville Police Department and the Vermillion County Coroner's Office continue to investigate the incident. And now an information article, and the first has it with the headline, Forecast Calls for Wet Spring. Dateline Springfield. The state's climatologist is predicting Illinois farmers are likely to endure wet weather while they try to plant cash crops this spring after suffering major losses as a result of record wet planting season last year. April through June is likely to be wetter than normal in Illinois, according to rainfall projections from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, posing a challenge to corn and soybean farmers in the heart of planting season. Right now, those farmers are calculating their losses after suffering through the wettest January to June in state history last year. Wettest of those months was May, which pushed planting of Illinois' top two crops into June and July, when in an ideal year they can be in the ground in April. The result, corn and soybean production dropped 18% and 20% respectively, according to final yield numbers from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. farmers should expect to deal with an increased frequency of wet winters and spring, said Illinois State climatologist Dr. Trent Ford, who expects wetter than normal conditions to become routine. After last weekend's rainstorms, Ford said, all but far northwest Illinois has had above-average January precipitation, with half the month still to go. NOAA also projects a wetter-than-average February and March. The last couple of decades especially, we've seen our winters be wetter than previous decades, Ford said. This doesn't mean more snow necessarily, it just means overall more precipitation. For example, he says 20 of the last 25 winters in Peoria have been wetter than the city's 120-plus year average. Preparing for wetter-than-normal conditions to be more common or happen more frequently is something that farmers should be doing in Illinois, Ford said. Continuous wet planting seasons present a challenge to farmers as late planting pushes back their entire farm timeline. Representative Charlie Meyer, Republican of Oakville, grows 1,600 acres of corn and soybeans on his farm east of St. Louis. Our planters started rolling on June 8th, and it was not pretty, he said. Delayed planting causes delayed harvest, which can lower end-of-year yields. Like farmers saw in 2019, late harvests also leave farmers less time for tilling fields before it gets too cold, which breaks up compacted soil and deep field ruts that can hold too much water. Unfortunately for Meyer, a lot of his tillage this fall just did not happen. Those factors will all go into next year's crop, he said. Now in winter, Meyer said, and other Illinois farmers are focused on getting tractors and equipment ready for planting season and hope they can better prepare their fields in the spring. Any sort of pre-planting or field preparation, Ford said, however, that gets delayed if we have a wetter than normal March or early April. Scientists point to climate change, also to refer to as global warming, as a main contributor to increased rainfall. As humans emit greenhouse gases such as carbon dioxide, they become trapped in the atmosphere. The more carbon in the atmosphere, the more moisture it can hold, increasing precipitation. The connections there are pretty strong, Ford said, of winter planting seasons and climate change. In wet regions such as this, there's a abundant water supply at the surface, he explained. So as the atmosphere can take in more water, it does. Scientists also expect heavy downpours to increase. If we get a large amount of precipitation in one single event, what that can do is inundate the soil very quickly and then cause a lot of runoff and flooding, Ford said. Decreases in crop production not only hurt farmers, but trickle down into other industries like corn elevators and trucking companies, says Mark Doherty, a senior economist at the Illinois Farm Bureau. Most of our ag businesses off the farm, which are a big part of the downstate ag economy, they all have lower revenues as well, Doherty said. A soggy spring could also spell dangers for Illinois farmers vulnerable to further crop losses, he said. You have costs no matter how much of a crop you raise, Meyer said, including rent, equipment, and supplies. Government aid and insurance payments help lessen the impact of low crop production last year, but they do not fix the problem. There is a legitimate concern here, Doherty said, as to the ability of some farmers to make debt payments on capital investments like machinery and land improvements. That percentage of farmers is going to be a higher percentage than it was last year at this time, he said. We are poorly poised to deal with that. There are strategies that can be taken to adapt to a wetter spring, Ford said, including soil conservation, field treatments, and improving drainage. Meyer said farmers may adapt by planting earlier, managing fields differently, or using strains of crops that respond better to wet fields. You learn to start planning, he said, adding that proactiveness helped him through periods of drought in the 1980s. Constantly adapting to worsening weather conditions, though, might not work in the long term, especially since crop production is what brings in a farm's income. Agriculture, especially here in the middle of the grain belt, is a volume business, Doherty said. You cannot make money off bushels you don't grow or that you don't have. Being at the mercy of Mother Nature, he said, will always be a part of the job. This is the nature of farming. You can't control the weather. And now the community briefs. And the first few are from Danville. The Danville Public Library will celebrate civil rights activist Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on Monday with crafts in the children's room. The documentary, 10 Things You May Not Know About Martin Luther King Jr., will be shown throughout the day for children ages 5 to 12. And the next is for January's Color Splash. It will happen at the Danville Art League, 320 North Franklin Street, and will be a winter landscape acrylic painting. The session will be from 6 to 8:30 p.m. January 24th. Cost is $35. For information about the events, please call the Art League at 217-442-9264 or check our website at www.danvilleartleague.com. And the next has the headline, Pageant Practice Set. The first Beauty of Hope Benefit Pageant Practice and informational meeting will be at 1 to 4 p.m. January 25th at Crossroads Christian Church, 3613 North Vermilion Street. Headshots will be taken during this meet and greet event. The goal of the non-profit organization is to support and build awareness for the American Cancer Society. Learn more at https://www.facebook.com/Beauty of Hope Pageant, all one word. And the next is from Hoopston, and it's about a gospel concert. The Lorraine Theater, 324 East Main Street, will present Jake's Boys, an 8-member Central Illinois Southern Gospel group, at 7 p.m. Saturday. State Representative Tom Bennett is a member of Jake's Boys. Mike Dalton of Georgetown also will perform. A free will donation will be accepted. Okay, and now an editorial, and it has the headline, ERA faces several court challenges. Dateline Springfield. 2 years after Illinois' legislature approved new language for the U.S. Constitution, codifying that rights cannot be denied due to gender, the Equal Rights Amendment gained enough state support to be ratified. Its potential implementation is more complicated, though. Virginia's General Assembly on Wednesday backed the addition of protections for women in the country's governing document. After both chambers accept each other's initiative, the Commonwealth will become the 38th to ratify the amendment, pushing it across the necessary legal threshold for passage. But opponents argue that that does not matter. When the Equal Rights Amendment was introduced and passed by Congress in 1972, the body set a 7-year deadline for state ratification. It was later pushed to 1982. By then, only 35 states formally supported the language, 5 of which, South Dakota, Idaho, Kentucky, Nebraska, and Tennessee, withdrew their backing for the measure in the 70s. Proponents point out the Constitution does not provide states the ability to rescind their support or enforce a deadline for ratification. They also assert Congress's placement of its cutoff is important. Former Illinois State Representative Steven Anderson, a Republican from Geneva, and one of the amendment's sponsors 2 years ago, said the deadline is in the resolution introducing the amendment for state consideration, not in its actual text. The Constitution's 27th Amendment, the last one officially passed, provides a model on why the deadline is ministerial. Former Illinois State Representative Lou Legg, a Skokie Democrat, said. He sponsored a bill in the House calling for Illinois' approval of the Equal Rights Amendment for about 25 years. The 27th Amendment provides that Congress cannot cut or increase its salary during a term. It passed in 1992, but was first introduced into America's first Congress more than 200 years ago. Several states ratified it by the late 1790s before it effectively died, Anderson said. In the 1990s, a college student from the University of Texas at Austin revived the effort, and the amendment was added to the country's governing document an outrageous length of time after its debut, Lang said. Attorneys general from three states, Alabama, South Dakota, and Louisiana, filed a lawsuit in November to prevent the Illinois Equal Rights Amendment from being added to the Constitution, even with Virginia's approval. In response to the suit, the U.S. Department of Justice said in a memo that Congress's deadline is constitutionally allowed and therefore prevents the amendment's passage. There are several legislative efforts to extend that limit, and the extension has the support of a number of Illinois' congressional delegation. Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, a Democrat from Illinois' 9th District, said she would work to advance the amendment at the congressional level. The Equal Rights Amendment is long overdue, and I will continue to work with my colleagues and advocates to push for its enactment following ratification in Virginia. I am an original co-sponsor of HJ Resolution 38, which currently has 218 co-sponsors, that clarifies that this amendment should take effect, Schakowsky said in an email statement. U.S. Representative John Shimkus, Republican of the 15th District, whose district includes Vermillion County, responded in an email, "The Equal Rights Amendment is unnecessary. The 14th Amendment to the Constitution already guarantees the equal protection of the laws to everyone, male or female, who was born or naturalized in the U.S. Frankly, the only subpopulation not covered by the 14th Amendment is our fellow students who are still in their mother's wombs. A constitutional amendment guaranteeing their inalienable right to life and equal protection of the laws is necessary, and it would earn my full support." Anderson and Lang agree the question will go straight to federal courts to settle. "Litigation is ramping up as we speak," Anderson said. "No matter what happens with the federal proposal," Anderson said, "the action taken by Virginia's General Assembly marked a momentous, historic day." And now a letter from the Dear Annie column. "Dear Annie, I understand and sympathize with sleepless in Spokane. My husband of 36 plus years and I have successfully slept in separate bedrooms for over 10 years. I like your suggestion of twin beds. I might also suggest that Sleepless in Spokane put a nightstand between the twin beds and use a white noise machine or even a fan. This is what I do whenever we have company or on vacation and hubby and I share a bed. Been there, dear. Been there. I'm glad to hear that separate bedrooms have worked out for you and your husband. That arrangement truly does seem to work wonders for many people these days. The white noise machine is an excellent tip that I should have mentioned in my original answer. Thanks for writing. I have now reached the limit of the time I can talk, and I look forward to reading with you again next week. This has been Lois Pausch reading the Vermillion County News for Friday, January 17th, 2020.